If you expect your media investment to deliver clear, measurable results, Walmart Connect can help you get there with powerful analytics and the reach of America's number one retailer. Their closed-loop measurement uses Walmart's proprietary customer purchase data to track the impact of your campaign on sales, not just on Walmart's site and app, but also in-store. For some campaigns, they can even provide rest-of-market data that tracks the impact on sales at other retailers. Visit WalmartConnect.com today and see how they can help make your media spend meaningful. Walmart Connect. More than media. Meaningful connections. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, April 17th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode topic is how to reduce friction at the point of sale. Before we get to that point of sale, though, let's meet today's guests. Joining me for today's episode, we have podcast regular, senior analyst Sky Canavis. Hey, Sky.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to see and hear you again.
Great to see and hear you again. And also joining us for today's episode, we have from our payment side of things, principal analyst David Morris. Hey, David.
Hello, hello. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Welcome back to the Retail Pod. It's been a long time.
It has been, yeah. I'm glad to be here.
We like to ignore payments. Just kidding. We don't like to ignore payments. Let's get started with free sample. Our Did You Know segment, where I share a fun fact, tidbit, or question. I've got like a fun fact quiz combo today. I'm going to start with the fun fact. Did you guys know that there is a McDonald's in Sweden that's been open since the 90s where customers can like ski through and get their meals?
No, I have not heard about that.
I've always admired Sweden. I'm not surprised that they've taken the fast food concept and innovated on it.
And made it healthier.
Right. Exercise and eat McDonald's.
My question for you is, what do you think that the McDonald's is called? It's Mick something. I'll give you that.
McSki?
Yeah, it's McSki. You got it.
That's great.
Some other ideas we had are Mick Chalet, Mick Slopes, but it's McSki. I think they could have pushed it slightly further. Okay, let's keep going. Now it's time for our next segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is how you reduce friction at the point of sale. Let's start off with a news item, which is that Amazon recently announced that it's pulling back on its just walkout checkout. That feels like a big reversal. I mean, there was even an SNL sketch on this last year, 2 years ago. The advantage of the technology was supposedly to reduce friction at the point of sale to the point where there kind of isn't a point of sale. The point of sale is just leaving the store. That clearly hasn't panned out, but let's talk about reducing friction at the point of sale overall. What is so important about that, both in-store and online? Sky, why don't you go first?
Well, I'll start with in-store. And in-store, the biggest point of friction is the checkout line. And waiting to pay can either lower your sales right away if someone decides to abandon a purchase that they planned because they don't want to or can't even wait. So that's a lost sale. And it's also a poor customer experience because it can impact future shopping decisions as to whether to go to a particular retailer at all. If they know that they're understaffed, there are going to be long lines. They might prefer to look elsewhere or go online. And then even when retailers have tried to introduce technologies like self-checkout, you know, that can also add more friction. We hear a lot about consumer frustrations at the self-checkout point. If the barcodes don't scan and there's not enough staff available to help, everything can end up taking even longer. And the lines at self-checkout, some self-checkouts that I've seen have been even longer than the manned checkout lines.
Yeah, we did like our fun fact a while ago was about self-checkout, about the first self-checkout, which I think, and I could be wrong, debuted in like Kansas in the late 80s. And there are a bunch of newspaper articles that were like, this will never catch on. So that is fascinating. I have abandoned so many carts online and left so many stores because of lines and because of difficulty entering payment information. I am definitely like that cart abandoner. I don't like it when it's difficult.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Sky laid out. I think that you could look at self-checkout also. I think for some people, there's almost a moral issue with it. You are replacing a human being. And I think you're seeing some of the same concerns about generative AI and technology beyond that, replacing human beings. I know people who don't use self-checkout because of that. And when you also think about a lost sale, which is the holy grail of retail, you're also potentially missing out on future sales and what can occur at the point of sale in so many positive ways. I went to Nordstrom. I needed a suit for a conference. So I went to Nordstrom. I've been a Nordstrom customer. And once I go up at the point of sale, which there was a seamless experience, and they're able to engage to try to sell me a credit card. They're able to engage by applying rewards to my purchase because I've been a customer. They're able to build a relationship with me via that human interaction. And Nordstrom does personalized service extremely well. So you miss out on all of that, the retention angle.
Yeah, that makes sense. But not every store is Nordstrom, right? So like Nordstrom, it definitely makes sense that there is a personal element that like ideally would be replicated in every store. But in grocery stores, a lot of what you're going for is speed, ease of use.
Speed, ease of use, sure. Yeah. But even so, I mean, you can have a rude cashier and
absolutely,
you're not going to want to go back. And every coffee house I go to that I want to return to, people are actually nice to me.
Yes.
You know, so there is the service component. I think that's important across the board. But point taken.
I definitely have those coffee shops where I'm just like, I fear those staff. Go ahead, Sky.
And in a retail store environment, that doesn't have to be limited to a checkout line. I mean, in some scenarios, like a supermarket, yes, you kind of might want to have one place to check out with a person. But in a lot of other retail environments where the customer service is more important, you can have mobile points of sale where a sales associate is empowered with an app or a phone to check people out across the store, and they can take the payments via tap to pay or even stored payment for loyalty members. They might have that. It would give them also the opportunity to upsell, to check inventory. If they don't have it in store, it might be available online for a ship to someone's home.
Yeah, I think the most familiar example of that is probably the Apple Store, which is relevant because it brings us to Apple Pay, which I think is like one of these big things that has helped reduce points of friction, both with tap to pay, checking out, and also online. Earlier today, I ordered a salad on the way to work, and I was able to just click the button on my phone instead of pulling out my card on the subway to order it. So yeah, similar in helping up those sales that might not otherwise take place.
I think, Sky, you and I were talking about this together a little while back, that ultimately one of the friction points is not being allowed to pay the way you want to pay. Mm-hmm. So it can be Apple Pay, it can be buy now, pay later. You need to be able to give people the option to pay the way they want to pay. And I don't know, Sky, if you wanted to add anything there.
Right. Online, we know that cart abandonment is such a huge issue. Well over 2/3 of online carts are abandoned. And there are a whole host of reasons for that. Some of it is just around consumer behavior. People want to save things in a shopping cart while they compare prices across different websites, or they use their shopping carts as kind of a wish list. But I think not having preferred payment method is a really big one as well. And another one is having to enter payment information. And that's especially critical because as more shopping moves to mobile, nobody ever wants to have to pull out a credit card and enter 16 digits into a tiny box on their phone, especially when there's a contrast in Apple Pay, which is pretty significant because it's so easy and it's just your face and you click a button and that's it. So I still feel a little bit of joy when I see Apple Pay button on my phone because I know it decreases the likelihood of friction. Yeah, sometimes the internet connection is not good or there's another issue. The website is slow. The app is slow. But overall, when I see Apple Pay, I know, oh, this is easy.
It is easy, but also like not everyone does use it. I mean, on our forecast, we have this is specifically for proximity mobile Apple Pay, so paying in person, but fewer than 50% of iOS users use Apple Pay at checkout. So what is stopping people from adopting those easier checkout strategies that would ultimately help retailers make those sales?
I would look at it more positively in that I think you've seen a tremendous amount of growth. You know, the pandemic is a tipping point for many to be able to switch into mobile. And the fact that you have that many people utilizing a smartphone to pay regularly, I think is actually a positive sign. I don't have the data in front of me, but we expect that to continue to grow very aggressively. And it's not just a consumer who may want to use Apple Pay. Do you use Buy Now, Pay Later, Sarah?
I don't use Buy Now, Pay Later. I'm afraid of it.
Yeah. So that's another podcast. You know, if you think about the Affirm user, not everybody accepts Affirm. Like credit and debit cards are almost ubiquitous if there's a point of sale, right? Buy now, pay later, not quite so much depending on the particular brand. But if you're Affirm, you know, you want to be able to make sure that whether or not that retailer accepts buy now, pay later, that you can get that Affirm user into the store and pay. And you can do that actually by using a virtual card. Affirm does have a debit card, and it can give that user a virtual card that they can upload into Apple Pay. And then lo and behold, they become an Apple Pay loser by virtue of being an Affirm user.
You said Apple Pay loser, but I'm going to assume that's just a slip.
And did I say Apple Pay loser? That's actually,
yeah, which I definitely am.
I mean,
the thing that got me to become one was the ability to pay at the subway. You can tap to pay with your phone. It's way faster than pulling anything out. It's really seamless. I was just talking this morning with our retail analyst, Sarah Marzano, about this. And she said that also got her to adopt it, as well as having a child, because now she is carrying a stroller or a kid around. And so the Apple Pay really helps with like the ease of use. I think it's one of those things that gets people over that like speed bump to adopting.
And that you mentioned this, Sarah, about speed and convenience at the grocery store, for mm-hmm. instance. And I think speed across the board is really, really important. That's one reason that PayPal has done some innovation with their checkout, streamlining it. You know, the short story there is essentially using one-click checkout, which in and of itself isn't new, but being able to platform that across over the course of maybe the next year, up to 35 million PayPal merchants, so that you have one-click checkout by virtue of having put your information into PayPal in the first place. And that, according to PayPal at least, cuts your checkout time in half, which sounds pretty good to me.
I want to keep moving into some predictions, but before we do that, I'm just curious, do either of you still carry cash?
I rarely carry cash. I keep like $20 in my wallet. Sometimes I feel like it might be there for years. And then I recently started carrying a little more cash for my daughter's allowance, but I rarely use cash. I can't remember the last time I went to an ATM. My husband does that and he gives me cash because I don't even know where my ATM card is.
I didn't carry cash for maybe 3 or 4 years, and I realized I was doing some people a disservice by that. You know, how am I going to give a tip? I don't have cash. And so I think, Sky, what I do is what you do. I mean, I have $60 to $80 tucked into a little wallet. I never use it, but at least it's there. It's on Linus's blanket of sorts.
I don't carry cash at all. I really should carry cash. I'm always at a bodega with a card limit or a cash-only bar or, like you said, David, needing to tip. I really should carry cash, but yeah, I don't. I'm all about ease of use.
You're a consumer, Sarah.
But more people are taking tips via Venmo or sharing their Venmo QR codes at places where you might tip.
My nail salon just made this switch, which makes me feel way less, I guess, guilty because I know that part of it gets taken away when I do it on the card. But yeah. All right, let's keep moving. Now it's time for our segment, Red Hot Retail. This is our guests' opportunity to give us their very specific and potentially risky predictions on a topic. The predictions can be mild, medium, spicy, or extra hot. The higher the spice level, the riskier the prediction. Today, I have asked Sky and David each to bring me 2 predictions for the future of retail payments. So we're keeping it very open-ended here. Sky, why don't you start us off with a spice level and a prediction?
Sure. Mine is mildly spicy. I would say jalapeno, but I tend to have really mixed luck with jalapenos, either not spicy at all or incredibly spicy. So maybe looking at my list of pepper spicy rankings, I'll put this at a poblano level.
Sure.
I don't think I've ever had a super hot poblano. But my prediction was inspired by your discussion of Amazon's Just Walk Out rollback in grocery stores. And they've said they're going to focus a bit more on their smart carts that can be used to kind of scan and go as people shop. And Instacart has something similar with their Caper carts. And my prediction is that these are more of a flash in the pan and won't gain that much traction because I don't know that retailers in grocery really want to invest in this technology. It might be a little expensive and they don't necessarily reduce friction. So Instacart put out an interesting press release recently talking about their Caper carts. And they talked about how people are waiting in line to use the Caper carts at some grocery stores because there's demand to try them out. So the time that they're saving at checkout, they're spending waiting in line. And they also are kind of promoting them as fun for the whole family, where kids will insist on playing with them and scanning all of the grocery items, which seems like it's just going to make the shopping trip take even longer. So yeah, if you have time, if you want to shop as entertainment and use a fun shopping cart that you can also play games on, and their real selling point is that they can be used to upsell and advertise via the screen on them. But I think they're a little gimmicky. And ultimately, I think scan and go via a mobile phone will be really the way to go. I've used it at Walmart and at Sam's Club, and it really is easier to scan products and kind of check out while I'm shopping. Those introduce a bit of a friction point when you're leaving the store because somebody has to check your receipt, but I think that's going to become more automated. So Sam's Club is rolling out these gates that will kind of use computer vision to see what's in your cart and check it against your receipt in the app.
Or if you're me, whose phone is always dead, the only reason that I think that the carts might stick around is because they're more real estate for advertisements. But if you have your phone in your hand as a scanner, you can replace the screen on the cart with the screen on the phone, and you can still put advertisements on it. So I don't necessarily think of these as a friction-reducing agent as much as more space for advertising. That said, Amazon's leading the charge on these, and I don't trust Amazon to get in-store correct really anywhere, so I don't necessarily trust their innovations.
For what it's worth, Sky, I completely agree. In the back of my head, I was thinking, well, you know, one thing the cart can do is provide the retailer a path. And if you think about grocery, that's extremely important in terms of where items are placed, how people navigate through that purchase experience. But I don't see any reason that they couldn't do that if the mobile phone is on too and you're tracking along the way.
David, can you give a spice level and a prediction?
Yeah, I'll give you the 2 out of 4. I guess that's somewhat spicy, but not too bad for most people. Realistic, perhaps, is another way of putting it. I think biometric checkout has a lot of legs. There's always been concerns about consumers' perceptions of privacy, trust, and so forth. I think a lot of that can really come down to a trust in a brand. I have an Apple phone. I don't think twice whenever it scans my face. The concept of something scanning my face prior to using Apple frightened the heck out of me. Didn't think I'd ever allow that to occur. But it's Apple, and I trust Apple, for better or for worse, to protect my information. Apple has a fantastic reputation, and Apple has a reputation for an amazing customer and user experience. So it's seamless, it's easy, it never faults me, and I'm in. And I think it's that kind of engagement and experience with biometrics that people need to have to get them on board. Amazon One, I know there's issues with Amazon Walkout, but Amazon One technology, which is the palm-based checkout, it's already in QSRs, convenience stores, gyms. They use it for enterprise security. They use it for hospitals. And I think there's some really strong utility. The use case is important here. Hospitals, for instance, where, you know, you don't want to be touching things, especially staff when they're there all the time, going from patient to patient. It's perfect in that regard. So I think those use cases, the stores with smaller footprint, and the real unique use cases like hospitals, I think there's a lot of room for movement there. I think what they need to do much better, on the other hand, is fix how people sign up for it in the first place, which is abominable. If you ever go to Whole Foods, I'm never signing up for it because, like we've already determined, I want to get the heck out of there.
Sure. So we have Amazon One biometrics taking off. Sky, can you give us another spice level and prediction?
So I'm actually going to take David's prediction up a notch of spiciness, maybe going into ghost pepper territory. And I'm thinking that payments are just really a gateway for more widespread use of biometrics as identifiers. And this could well come down to an Amazon versus Apple showdown, so to see. And what I'm thinking of is how we've seen how mobile wallets have moved from just holding payment or credit card information to then keeping all sorts of things that we would carry in a real world wallet. IDs like driver's licenses, tickets, your loyalty membership cards. And I think we'll see something like this tied to biometrics. And I think Amazon hints at it with Amazon One. So one thing they're doing to try to reduce the friction around signups is they just launched an Amazon One app where users can sign up for Amazon One with an app on their phone that will scan their palm. So they no longer have to do it in stores. And in their press release, they kind of talk about using Amazon One, not just for payments, but also for entry, age verification, and loyalty rewards. And so as Amazon One is going to extend beyond Whole Foods and into more locations like stadiums and airports, and they talk about fitness centers, we could easily see this being used for more types of entry and IDs. So that could well end up being a battle between Amazon and Apple. But I think, as David also noted, Apple is a little better positioned just because it so seamlessly integrates that biometrics and payments with so many other things on its phones. And I think it'll continue to do so as it moves into extended reality through, right now we have the Vision Pro, but I think that's really a very early prototype of what could be in the future with extended reality and glasses that will make this even more lightweight and will capture a lot more biometric data, retinal data in particular.
Yeah, I don't doubt this. I went to Madison Square Garden over the weekend and you could get through security using your Clear membership, like at the airport. It's that sort of like movement of something that you might not have thought made sense in that context 5 years ago, now making perfect sense, that I think will open the floodgates for biometrics. David, can you close us off with your last spice level and last prediction?
Yeah, I'll go 4, I guess. I'm not sure how spicy that would be from the standpoint of a particular pepper, but I will tell you, it's spicy. And I'll try to be brief. This is a fascinating and could probably talk for 3 days about it. So virtual assistants, I would just start by saying, at least in my personal opinion, I think they're terrible. I hate them. I hate using chatbots. And, you know, I'll leave it at that. But I think some of the reasons are obvious. You know, you're not talking to a human being. You're not really getting an answer. You're getting over to this step and that step. It's just not efficient. I don't get much out of it. And then I met MasterCard Shopping Muse. I had the good fortune of speaking with some folks at MasterCard as a part of developing a report recently. And this is a generative AI virtual assistant. Okay, and what that means is that it can use natural language to talk to you like a human being. That sounds pretty good to me. It can use affinity-based personalization. And that's essentially kind of taking every endpoint of engagement on the site, whether it's, you know, the color of the clothing, the size of the clothing, where you looked, how many times you looked, which pages, how many pages, wrapping that up into recommendations based on a person's affinities and preferences. It's got Gen AI hook because it can utilize image recognition. So you're looking at increasingly accurate recommendations and results for the consumer. This is something that's useful. This is something that has utility. This is something that helps make a sale and I think has the potential to make me as a customer happy, right? And you can even complete the purchase by directing to checkout. It can suggest payment preferences based on your behavior and maybe getting a maximal reward. I think it's a slam dunk. You're going to see it out in the marketplace this year. But the kicker here, why this is the hottest pepper, Pepper X, is that I see the potential, taking a leap here, that this could be used in the store. You know, this is an online tool right now, but I don't see why it couldn't be used in the store. And I'd actually leave that open for debate if we had time, but that's the kicker.
I am curious, how would it be used in the store? Because I'm familiar with AI agentics online, not in the store.
Well, why not have a kiosk that you walk up to, you start talking to or engaging with the virtual assistant instead of a human being?
So that would be like a hologram. Is it a hologram type of assistant inside?
Let's turn it into a hologram. That's great, Sky. Now that's a real 4, okay? Yeah, that's Pepper X.
I've been seeing them at some of the retail expos, like at the NRF's big show, and they're out there.
That's perfect. Yep.
Every person I talk to from an agency who is like high level and works in AI is really bullish on AI agents and AI's ability to make purchases for you and marketers' eventual need to market to those bots. So I definitely don't think this is out of the question.
Well, the unspoken truth is that I think people are terrified of AI and generative AI. And the more traction it gets, the more people are going to think they're going to be out of a job. Nobody likes that.
I like you speaking that truth, though. That is all we have time for today, so thank you so much for being here, Sky.
Thank you, Sarah and David.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much. Good to be here with both of you.
Good to have you. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast so there's no friction. We'll be back Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast. And tomorrow, join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Walmart Connect.